Continuing with the section on Dhammanupassana and the we've been going over the first topic of Dhammanupassana, the hindrances, and I pretty much exhausted the hindrances, and what I decided to do was finish off the section on the hindrances with just plucking out one sutta a piece, one, or sometimes if they're short, another one, extra one, just to finish off this section on the hindrances. And so we'll just be taking each kind of each hindrance and illustrating it with a particular sutta, and there's no particular rigor, just sort of whatever sort of popped into my mind or whatever I could find that seemed to illustrate the particular hindrance. So this first hindrance of kamachanda on sensuality, sensual desire. picking out the Majjhima 75, the Magandhiya Sutta, which is probably the most kind of vivid discourse that the Buddha gives around the aspects of sensuality. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living in the Kuru country, where there was a town of the Kurus named Kamasadamma, on a spread of grass in the fire chamber of a Brahmin belonging to the Bharadvaja clan. Then when it was morning, the Blessed One dressed, and taking his bowl and outer robe, went into Kamasadamma for alms. When he had wandered for alms in Kamasadamma and had returned from his alms round, after his meal, he went to a certain grove for the day's abiding. Having entered the grove, he sat down at the root of a tree for the day's abiding. Then the wanderer Magandhiya, while walking and wandering for exercise, went to the fire chamber of the Brahmin belonging to the Bharadvaja clan. There he saw a spread of grass prepared and asked the Brahmin, "For whom has this spread of grass been prepared in Master Bharadvaja's fire chamber? It seems like it might be a recluse's bed." "Master Magandhiya, there is the recluse Gotama, the son of the Sakyans, who went forth from a Sakyan clan. Now a good report of Master Gotama has been spread to this effect. That Blessed One is accomplished, fully enlightened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, sublime, knower of worlds, incomparable leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, enlightened, blessed. This bed has been prepared for that Master Gotama." "Indeed, Master Bharadvaja, it is an ill sight we see when we see the bed of that destroyer of growth, Master Gotama." "Be careful what you say, Magandhiya. Be careful what you say. Many learned Brahmins, learned nobles, learned householders, and learned recluses have full confidence in Master Gotama and have been disciplined by him in the noble true way, in the Dhamma that is wholesome. Master Bharadvaja, even if we saw that Master Gotama face to face, we would tell him to his face, 'The recluse Gotama is a destroyer of growth.' Why is that? Because that has come down in our discourse. If Master Magandhiya has no objection, may I tell this to Master Gotama? Let Master Bharadvaja be at ease. Tell him just what I have said. Meanwhile, with the divine ear, which is purified and surpasses the human, the Blessed One heard this conversation between the Brahmin of the Bharadvaja clan and the wanderer Magandhiya. Then, when it was evening, the Blessed One rose from meditation, went to the Brahmin's fire chamber, and sat down on the spread of grass made ready. Then the Brahmin of the Bharadvaja clan went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side. The Blessed One asked him, Bharadvaja, did you have any conversation with the wanderer Magandhya about this very same spread of grass? When this was said, the Brahman, awestruck and with his hair standing on end, replied, We wanted to tell Master Gotama about that very thing, but Master Gotama has anticipated us. But this discussion between the Blessed One and the Brahman of the Bharadvaja clan was left unfinished. For then the wanderer Magandhya, while walking and wandering for exercise, came to the Brahman's fire chamber and went up to the Blessed One. He exchanged greetings with the Blessed One, and when this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side. The Blessed One said to him, Magandhya, the eye delights in forms, takes delight in forms, rejoices in forms. That has been tamed by the Tathagata, guarded, protected, and restrained, and he teaches the Dhamma for its restraint. Was it with reference to this that you said, The recluse Gotama is a destroyer of growth? It was reference to this, Master Gotama, that I said, The recluse Gotama is a destroyer of growth. Why is that? Because that is recorded in our scriptures. The ear delights in sounds, the nose delights in odors, the tongue delights in flavors, the body delights in tangibles, the mind delights in mind objects, takes delight in mind objects, rejoices in mind objects. That has been tamed by the Tathagata, guarded, protected, and restrained, and he teaches the Dhamma for its restraint. Was it with reference to this that you said, The recluse Gotama is a destroyer of growth? It was reference to this, Master Gotama, that I said, The recluse Gotama is a destroyer of growth. Why is that? Because that is recorded in our scriptures. What do you think, Magandhya? Here someone may have formerly enjoyed himself with forms cognizable by the eye that are wished for, desired, agreeable, and likable, connected with sensual desire and provocative of lust. On a later occasion, having understood as they actually are the origin, the disappearance, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in case of forms, he might abandon craving for forms, remove fever for forms, and abide without thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace. What would you say to him, Magandhya? Nothing, Master Gotama. What do you think, Magandhya? Here someone may have formerly enjoyed himself with sounds cognizable by the ear, with odors cognizable by the nose, with flavors cognizable by the tongue, with tangibles cognizable by the body that are wished for, desired, agreeable, and likable, connected with sensual desire and provocative of lust. On a later occasion, having understood as they actually are, the origin, the disappearance, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of tangibles, he might abandon craving for tangibles, remove fever for tangibles, and abide without thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace. What would you say to him, Magandhya? Nothing, Master Gotama. Magandhya, formerly when I lived the home life, I enjoyed myself, provided and endowed with the five cords of sensual pleasure, with forms cognizable by the eye, with sounds cognizable by the ear, with odors cognizable by the nose, with flavors cognizable by the tongue, with tangibles cognizable by the body that are wished for, desired, agreeable, and likable, connected with sensual desire and provocative of lust. I had three palaces, one for the rainy season, one for the winter, and one for the summer. I lived in the rain's palace for the 4 months of the rainy season, enjoying myself with musicians, none of whom were men, and I did not go down to the lower palace. On a later occasion, having understood as they actually are the origin, the disappearance, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of sensual pleasures, I abandoned craving for sensual pleasures. I remove fever for sensual pleasures, and I abide without thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace. I see other beings who are not free from lust for sensual pleasures, being devoured by sensual being devoured by craving for sensual pleasures, burning with fever for sensual pleasures, indulging in sensual pleasures, and I do not envy them, nor do I delight therein. Why is that? Because there is, Magandhya, a delight apart from sensual pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, which surpasses even divine bliss. Since I take delight in that, I do not envy what is inferior, nor do I delight therein. Suppose, Magandhya, a householder or a householder's son was rich with great wealth and property, and being provided and endowed with the five cords of sensual pleasures. He might enjoy himself with forms cognizable by the eye, with sounds cognizable by the ear, with odors cognizable by the nose, with flavors cognizable by the tongue, with tangibles cognizable by the body that are wished for, desired, agreeable, and likable. Connected with sensual desire and provocative of lust, having conducted himself well in body, speech, and mind, on the dissolution of the body after death, he might reappear in a happy destination, in the heavenly world, in the retinue of the gods of the 33, and there, surrounded by a group of nymphs in the Nandana grove, he would enjoy himself, provided and endowed with the five cords of divine sensual pleasure. Suppose he saw a householder or a householder's son enjoying himself, provided and endowed with the five cords of human sensual pleasure. What do you think, Magandhya? Would that young god, surrounded by a group of nymphs in the Nandana grove, enjoying himself, provided and endowed with the five cords of divine sensual pleasure, envy the householder or the householder's son for the five cords of human sensual pleasure? Or would he be enticed by human sensual pleasures? No, Master Gotama. Why not? Because divine sensual pleasures are more excellent and sublime than human sensual pleasures. So too, Magandhya, formerly when I lived the home life, I enjoyed myself, provided and endowed with the five cords of sensual pleasure, with forms cognizable by the eye, with sounds cognizable by the ear, with odors cognizable by the nose, by flavors cognizable by the tongue, with tangibles cognizable by the body, that are wished for, desired, agreeable, and likable, connected with sensual desire and provocative of lust. On a later occasion, having understood as they actually are the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of sensual pleasures, I abandon craving for sensual pleasures. I remove fever for sensual pleasures, and I abide without thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace. I see other beings who are not free from lust for sensual pleasures, being devoured by craving for sensual pleasures, burning with fever for sensual pleasures, indulging in sensual pleasures, and I do not envy them, nor do I delight therein. Why is that? Because there is, Magandhya, a delight apart from sensual pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, which surpasses even divine bliss. Since I take delight in that, I do not envy what is inferior, nor do I delight therein. Suppose, Magandhya, there was a leper with sores and blisters on his limbs, being devoured by worms, scratching the scabs off the openings of his wounds with his nails, cauterizing his body over a burning charcoal pit. Then his friends and companions, his kinsmen and relatives, would bring a physician to treat him. The physician would make medicine for him, and by means of that medicine, the man would be cured of his leprosy, and would become well and happy, independent, master of himself, able to go where he likes. Then he might see another leper with sores and blisters on his limbs, being devoured by worms, scratching the scabs off the openings of his wounds with his nails, cauterizing his body over a burning charcoal pit. What do you think, Magandhya? Would that man envy that leper for his burning charcoal pit or his use of medicine? No, Master Gotama. Why is that? Because when there is sickness, there is need for medicine, and when there is no sickness, there is no need for medicine. So too, Magandhya, formerly when I lived the home life, and it repeats it all, since I delight in that, I do not envy what is inferior, nor do I delight therein. Suppose, Magandhya, There was a leper with sores and blisters on his limbs, being devoured by worms, scratching the scabs off the openings of his wounds with his nails, cauterizing his body over burning charcoal pit. Then his friends and companions, his kinsmen and relatives, brought a physician to treat him. The physician would make medicine for him, and by means of that medicine, the man would be cured of his leprosy and would become well and happy, independent, master of himself, able to go where he likes. Then two strong men would seize him by both arms and drag him towards a burning charcoal pit. What do you think, Magandhya? Would that man twist his body this way and that? Yes, Master Gotama. Why is that? Because that fire is indeed painful to touch, hot and scorching. What do you think, Magandhya? Is it only now that that fire is painful to touch, hot and scorching? Or previously too, was that fire painful to touch, hot and scorching? Master Gotama, that fire is now painful to touch, hot and scorching, and previously too, that fire was painful to touch, hot and scorching. For when that man was a leper with sores and blisters on his limbs, being devoured by worms, scratching the scabs off the openings of his wounds with his nails, his faculties were impaired. Thus, though the fire was actually painful to touch, he acquired a mistaken perception of it as pleasant. So too, Magandhya, in the past, sensual pleasures were painful to touch, hot and scorching. In the future, sensual pleasures will be painful to touch, hot and scorching. And now at present, sensual pleasures are painful to touch, hot and scorching. But these beings who are not free from lust for sensual pleasures, who are devoured by craving for sensual pleasures, who burn with fever for sensual pleasures, have faculties that are impaired. Thus, though sensual pleasures are actually painful to touch, they acquire a mistaken perception of them as pleasant. Suppose, Magandhya, there was a leper with sores and blisters on his limbs, being devoured by worms, scratching the scabs off the openings of his wounds with his nails, cauterizing his body over a burning charcoal pit. The more he scratches the scab, the more he scratches the scabs and cauterizes his body, the fouler, more evil-smelling, and more infected the openings of his wounds would become. Yet he would find a certain measure of satisfaction and enjoyment in scratching the openings of his wounds. So too, Magandhya, beings who are not free from lust for sensual pleasures, who are devoured by craving for sensual pleasures, who burn with fever for sensual pleasures, still indulge in sensual pleasures. The more such beings indulge in sensual pleasures, the more their craving for sensual pleasures increases, and the more they are burned by their fever for sensual pleasures, yet they find a certain measure of satisfaction and enjoyment in dependence on the five cords of sensual pleasure. What do you think, Magandhya? Have you ever seen or heard of a king or a king's minister enjoying himself, provided and endowed with the five cords of sensual pleasure, who, without abandoning craving for sensual pleasures, without removing fever for sensual pleasures, was able to abide free from thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace, or who is able, or who will be able to so abide? No, Master Gotama. Good, Magandhya. I, too, have never seen or heard of a king or a king's minister enjoying himself, provided and endowed with the five cords of sensual pleasure, who, without abandoning craving for sensual pleasures, without removing fever for sensual pleasures, was able to abide free from thirst with a mind inwardly at peace, or who is able or who will be able to so abide. On the contrary, Magandhya, those recluses or Brahmins who abide or who abided or abide, or will abide, free from thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace, all do so after having understood as they actually are the origin, the disappearance, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of sensual pleasures. And it is after abandoning craving for sensual pleasures and removing fever for sensual pleasures that they abided, or abide, or will abide, free from thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace. Then at that point, the Blessed One uttered this exclamation. The greatest of all gains is health. Nibbana is the greatest bliss. The Eightfold Path is the best of paths, for it leads safely to the deathless. When this was said, the wanderer Maghandiya said to the Blessed One, It is wonderful, Master Gotama. It is marvelous how well that has been expressed by Master Gotama. The greatest of all gains is health. Nibbana is the greatest bliss. We too have heard earlier wanderers who were teachers and teachers of teachers saying this, and it agrees, Master Gotama. But Maghandiya, when you heard earlier wanderers who were teachers and teachers of teachers saying this, what is that health? What is that Nibbana? When this was said, the wanderer Maghandiya rubbed his own limbs with his hands and said, This is that health, Master Gotama, this is that Nibbana, for I am now healthy and happy and nothing afflicts me. Maghandiya, suppose there was a man born blind who could not see dark and light forms, who could not see blue, yellow, red, or pink forms, who could not see what was even and uneven, who could not see the stars of the sun and moon. He might hear a man with good eyesight saying, Good indeed, sirs, is a white cloth, beautiful, spotless, and clean. And he would go in search of a white cloth. Then a man would cheat him with a dirty, soiled garment, thus, Good man, here is a white cloth for you, beautiful, spotless, and clean. And he would accept it and put it on. And being satisfied with it, he would utter words of satisfaction, thus, Good indeed, sirs, is a white cloth, beautiful, spotless, and clean. What do you think, Maghandiya, when that man born blind accepted that dirty soiled garment, put it on, and being satisfied with it, uttered words of satisfaction thus, Good indeed, sirs, is a white cloth, beautiful, spotless, and clean. Did he do so knowing and seeing, or out of faith in the man with good eyesight? Venerable sir, he would have done so unknowing and unseeing, out of faith in the man with good eyesight. So too, Maghandiya, the wanderers of other sects are blind and visionless. They do not know health, they do not see Nibbana. Yet they utter this stanza thus, The greatest of all gains is health, Nibbana is the greatest bliss. This stanza was uttered by the earlier accomplished ones, fully enlightened ones thus, The greatest of all gains is health, Nibbana is the greatest bliss, the Eightfold Path is the best of paths, for it leads to safety, to the deathless. Now it has gradually become current among ordinary people, and although this body, Maghandiya, is a disease, a tumor, a dart, a calamity, and an affliction, referring to this body, you say, This is that health, Master Gotama, this is that Nibbana. You do not have that noble vision, Maghandiya, by means of which you might know health and see Nibbana. I have confidence in Master Gotama thus. Master Gotama is capable of teaching me the Dhamma in such a way that I can come to know health and to see Nibbana. Maghandiya, suppose there was a man born blind who could not see dark and light forms, who could not see blue, yellow, red, or pink forms, who could not see what was even and uneven, who could not see the stars or the sun and moon. Then his friends and companions, his kinsmen and relatives, would bring a physician to treat him. The physician would make a medicine for him, yet by means of that medicine, the man's vision would not arise or be purified. What do you think, Maghandiya? Would that doctor reap weariness and disappointment? Yes, Master Gotama. So too, Maghandiya, if I were to teach you the Dhamma thus, this is that health, this is that Nibbana, you might not know health or see Nibbana, and that would be wearisome and troublesome for me. I have confidence in Master Gotama thus. Master Gotama is capable of teaching me the Dhamma in such a way that I can come to know health and to see Nibbana. Maghandiya, suppose there was a man born blind who could not see dark and light forms, and so on, or the sun and the moon. He might hear a man with good eyesight saying, Good indeed, sirs, is a white cloth, beautiful, spotless, and clean. And he would go in search of a white cloth. Then a man would cheat him with a dirty, soiled garment, thus, Good man, here is a white cloth for you, beautiful, spotless, and clean. And he would accept it and put it on. Then his friends and companions, his kinsmen and relatives, would bring a physician to treat him. The physician would make medicine, emetics and purgatives, ointments and counter-ointments, and nasal treatment. And by means of that medicine, the man's vision would arise and be purified. Together with the arising of his vision, his desire and liking for that dirty, soiled garment would be abandoned. Then he might burn with indignation and enmity towards that man, and might think that he ought to be killed thus. Indeed, I have long been tricked, cheated, and defrauded by this man with this dirty, soiled garment when he told me, 'Good man, here is a white cloth for you, beautiful, spotless, and clean.' So too, my Gandhiya, if I were to teach you the Dhamma thus, 'This is that health, this is that Nibbana,' you might know health and see Nibbana. Together with the arising of your vision, your desire and lust for the five aggregates affected by clinging might be abandoned. Then perhaps you might think, 'Indeed, I have long been tricked, cheated, and defrauded by this mind. For when clinging, I have been clinging just to material form. I have been clinging just to feeling. I have been clinging just to perception. I have been clinging just to formations. I have been clinging just to consciousness. With my clinging as condition, being comes to be. With being as condition, birth. With birth as condition, aging and death. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair come to be. Such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. I have confidence in Master Gotama thus. Master Gotama is capable of teaching me the Dhamma in such a way that I might rise up from this seat, cured of my blindness. Then, my Gandhiya, associate with true men. When you associate with true men, you will hear the true Dhamma. When you hear the true Dhamma, you will practice in accordance with the true Dhamma. When you practice in accordance with the true Dhamma, you will know and see for yourself thus. These are diseases, tumors, and darts. But here these diseases, tumors, and darts cease without remainder. With the cessation of my clinging comes cessation of being. With the cessation of being, cessation of birth. With the cessation of birth, aging, and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair cease. Such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering." When this was said, the wanderer Magandhiya said, "Magnificent Master Gotama, magnificent Master Gotama. Master Gotama has made the Dhamma clear in many ways, as though he were turning upright what had been overthrown, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyesight to see forms. I go to Master Gotama for refuge and to the Dhamma and to the Sangha Bhikkhus. I would receive the going forth under Master Gotama. I would receive the full admission. Magandhiya, one who formerly belonged to another sect and desires the going forth and the full admission in this Dhamma and discipline, lives on probation for 4 months. At the end of 4 months, if the bhikkhus are satisfied with him, they give him the going forth and the full admission to the bhikkhu state. But I recognize individual differences in this matter. Venerable Sir, if those who formerly belong to another sect and desire the going forth and the full admission in this Dhamma and discipline live on probation for 4 months, and if at the end of the 4 months the bhikkhus being satisfied with them give them the going forth and the full admission to the bhikkhu state, then I will live on probation for 4 years. At the end of the 4 years, if the bhikkhus are satisfied with me, let them give me the going forth and the full admission to the bhikkhu state." Then the wanderer Magandhiya received the going forth under the Blessed One, and he received the full admission. And soon, not long after his full admission, dwelling alone, withdrawn, diligent, ardent, and resolute, the Venerable Magandhiya, by realizing for himself with direct knowledge, here and now entered upon and abided in that supreme goal of the holy life, for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from the home life into homelessness. He directly knew, birth is destroyed, the holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being. And the Venerable Magandhiya became one of the Arahants." The classic suttas. it's worthy of note that this discourse was given In the Kuru country and Kamasa Dhamma, there's actually several suttas that were given in the same place, and they're all kind of pithy. Satipatthana Sutta is given there as an example. And there's several of them that meaty suttas. And it's actually also, although this is a sutta illustrating sensual desire, it's also a can see a segue moving into the next section of the Dhammanupassana, which will be on the khandhas, and so that is part of that, with that abandoning sensual desire is also abandoning the five aggregates affected by clinging. There's also, I draw attention to the one of the things I particularly like is this is a good example of how the Buddha formulated dependent origination, in a sense that principle of dependent origination, without having to go into the whole 12 links of the dependent origination cycle, but there's many, many discourses where there's just parts of that whole chain, and then what it's doing is that illustrating that sense of how the Buddha formulated that conditioned how things arise according to conditions. Any questions? Yeah. Well, I think one is this a good a way of framing it is this just as in this sutta, which is a very good example, is seeing the seeing it's arising, it's coming to be, it's passing away, it's seeing the danger, the gratification or the pleasant aspect and the escape, so in terms of any kind of hindrance. And because one of the things that one is doing, especially as Dhammanupassana, what one's doing is rather than identifying with it as, here's me with my hindrance again, and I'm always getting caught in this, and sort of the I keeps formulating its identification around a particular hindrance, sort of looking at it in terms of an object of attention, an object of investigation. And that's, of course, that's the whole function of that looking on it as from a basis of a satipatthana, an opportunity for investigation, opportunity for seeing it in framing it in a different way, so that one takes an interest in it in a different way and frames it in a different way, so that one's starting to see its origin, its disappearance, its gratification, its danger, and its the way out. So that's a very skillful framework for investigation or for how to hold a particular hindrance. whichever it is. Because what happens is we tend to, say, personalize it, identify with it, see it as an integral part of our personality and whatnot. So then it has its own perpetuating energy.
In terms of clinging, would you say that clinging is around the senses and not the sensual desires? Does that make sense? I can't remember, but I think there's maybe where the clinging
explains, like, where's
clinging
where is the tiger? Right. Well, the clinging is well, I mean, it actually form. I mean, the clinging itself is the just that act of holding on to, because it's either the object or the subject. It doesn't really matter, in the sense of either the object of the senses or the subject of the khanda, the perception, or the clinging is to the perception or to the body or to the identification with consciousness, because when the Buddha formulates clinging, then of course there's clinging to sensual desires, there's clinging to a particular view, the view of this being something, the view of me getting something, the view of this, some particular viewpoint, this is going to be good, or this is good, this is what the view is formulated by an assumed something from societal or cultural. So there's a particular view comes into being, or the sense of the clinging is there because of the that it's going to, which means another type of view, but the silabhata paramasa, silabhata upata. So that it's a practice or precept or way of behaving or conduct that is either beneficial or is being clung to in some sort of way, and of course the sense of akavadupata, clinging and this identification with the sense of self. So that but in terms of the sensual desires, the clinging can either go onto the object or onto the subject. That is really, doesn't actually discriminate, so long as I can cling. Yeah?
I'm trying to remember, I don't know if I remember it correctly, but there's somewhere where, was it Chitta the householder, or was he quoting some Buddha about talking about clinging to the fabric, the bond?
Right. Yeah, there's the story. The illustration is that is the oxen, the two oxen.
Right. And the clinging is to the fetter that binds the two.
Yeah, yeah.
In which case, was that sensual desire? Was
it? I think so. Yeah.
The
yeah. Yeah. Yes. Well, you just have to keep doing it. It's just because you understand something doesn't mean you actually, just the same with anything. Just because you've got an intellectual concept of it, it's the same you know the words in a book of what sensual desire is, or you know what anger is in a book, but that's nothing to do with what the mind is, nothing to do with the feeling is, nothing to do with what the either the gratification, the danger, the way out. And so one has to be looking in that way. One has to this is what the function of investigation and contemplation is. It's not just to learn some concepts. It's to use those structures for getting underneath the experience, and so that it can be understood and uprooted.
I don't know if this is actually a question, but it's just fascinating to me that it's like the sense of having an inverted perception, like Mugandhya and the leper going for the coals, and the inverted perception that it's something which is pleasant.
Yeah.
And then just trying to apply that to every sense-based taste and everything else.
Totally. Yeah.
The inverted perception that's pleasant, whereas it's actually, like I remember in the book, how is it something like, everything we consider pleasant is actually painful.
Yeah,
it's just
fascinating. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a really helpful point of investigation. So, you know, what is it that we actually, what is it that we're actually attaching to? What is it that we're actually assuming? That assuming of pleasure. The one the illustration that I always felt very strongly with was that when you're covered in poison oak, you're sort of just totally covered in poison oak, and which, and it's a fairly common experience for me, and then having a shower, so painful, but it's really pleasurable. I can remember that first time. Of having that associate, I'm just like that leper. My Gandhiya Sutta.
For the same amount of knowledge, just talking about inverted perception, I'm wondering if you would speak on. I remember, like, Adama Buddha talking about, perceiving difficulty and problems as a whetstone for mindfulness as a good thing.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you, I don't know if there's any passages here. Analogies or similes, but in terms of ways to perceive discomfort, difficulty,
problems. Well, certainly that's the of course that's the tool of the Four Noble Truths. That's that wedge of the Four Noble Truths, where rather than it being some perceived dukkha which is weighing one down or is an impingement on one. It's like it's an opportunity for understanding it as dukkha, seeing the cause, seeing the cessation, and seeing a path leading to cessation, so that it's framing it immediately differently rather than something that is uncomfortable or unpleasant, unwanted. It's seen as an opportunity for understanding the way out, and seeing that there's a causal process. In the same way that there's a causal process for clinging leading to suffering, there's the same causal process for the relinquishing of clinging, coming through seeing clearly, and to a cessation of dukkha.